Clifford Stone spent 22 cheese muffin years in the United States Army as part of an above top secret team that was dispatched to crash sites in order to recover alien vehicles, bodies, and artifacts. Until his death, he maintained that the United States government has knowledge of intelligent life visiting Earth in vehicles capable of traveling light years of distance at incredible speeds, completely dismantling our understanding of the laws of physics. He claims that the recovery of these vehicles and technology has allowed our government to make enormous scientific gains of great potential benefit to the world, and that black projects have continued to keep these important discoveries secret based on motives known only to them. After his retirement from the army, he became an outspoken critic of this secret kept from the public, one he himself was a part of. Join us this week as we talk UFO crash retrieval and aliens shenanigans, all through the lens of one Clifford Stone.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth. Truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't have Top Secret clearance. But we did love the movie Top Secret. This is Hysteria 51.
I'm not the first guy who fell in love with a girl he met in a restaurant who then turned out to be the daughter of a kidnapped scientist, only to lose her to a childhood lover who she'd last seen on a deserted island and who turned out 15 years later to be the leader of the French underground.
I know it. It all sounds like some bad movie.
Shout out to Val.
Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, my name is John Goforth, and across from me is the incomparable Mr. Brent Hand.
Thank you, John. And nice reference in the opening. As long-time listeners know, we always are up for Val on the pod. Always. Always.
I will always take a side of Val. Absolutely. And speaking of... It's sort of somewhat topical. There's a new documentary out of his life. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I heard it's really good, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, man, it really is good. Dude took a ton of home movies, but the coolest slash, I suppose, saddest part of it is that he narrates the whole thing, even though he lost his voice a few years ago to throat cancer. So the way that worked, I guess they had so much audio of him that they used AI to essentially create a bot to say whatever the heck they wanted for the narration. In fact, he actually wrote the narration, the actual words. So, you know, it kind of felt like it came from him, obviously. It works really, really well.
That's so sad, you know, what he's went through, because he was doing that one-man show and getting ready to do Mark Twain, Citizen Twain, and back in the day, and I remember when he got sick, and tried to, like, cover it up. Not cover it up, but he was out of the public eye for a while, and I'm glad that he's not anymore, even though it's got to be hard to when you can't speak properly.
It's cool that, I mean, we're seeing just the use of technology to help folks who have been in tough spots.
Yeah, it's awesome that he has a way to speak, so to speak.
Are you serious? You have me sitting here every day and you get all hot and bothered over a glorified speak and spell?
Yeah, no, glorified speak, no, fuck you, that was your name in high school, and now, and for fucking ever, because that's all you're fucking worth.
Whatever. Talk to me when their Valbot can enact a plan for world domination.
Yeah, well, talk to us when you can add inflection to your voice, Mr. I'm so advanced.
Cheese biscuits.
We're fucking missing something up there. What?
Aren't as good as cheese muffins. Lobster lover forever.
There it is. I was worried for a second. I was worried. Now I'm not. Anyway, so you say the doc is good, John? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, you definitely should spend some time with it.
I will definitely give it a shot. But enough shenanigans, because we have a returning guest. We're on a bit of a streak here. We got guests galore.
It's the great podcast reopening.
Yeah, we're open for business. I'm spreading my proverbial podcast legs for you, is what I'm getting at, Rob. Welcome back to the show.
we hope none of you are having dinner right now.
I feel so welcomed right now. Thank you.
It has been a long time, man. I think we were chatting before, and you said it's been like a year since you've been on.
Yeah, last time I was on, we were talking about old Ed Walters and Gulf Breeze last year.
Man, you always bring us the insert name, and then everyone goes, oh, yeah, Okay. Like that type. I this is a fun one because of how I always say a fun one. It's either a fun one or a weird one. This is an interesting one, and you brought it to me. You actually
it's like a host like Conan O'Brien or Jay Leno or whatever. We got a good show tonight. They say it every night. Just tell me the one time you don't have a good show. Guys, I got to be honest with you. We got kind of a shitty show tonight, but I'm going to get through it. You'll get through it with me. We'll get through it together.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
I realized what was happening right before we were actually recording, because you actually reached out and said, hey, have you guys covered Clifford Stone? I said, no, we haven't yet. And you go, I want to be on. Let's do it. I said, great. And we have talked the last couple weeks here and there about it. And then today you say, all right, I got to get this shit out of my head. I just realized you went down this deep rabbit hole learning about Clifford Stone, realized you don't have anywhere to talk about it. You go, I got to get on here, get it out of my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys facilitate that, because we're talking about crash retrievals tonight, folks. That's what we're getting into. Crash retrievals. Recovered bodies, recovered craft.
The nuts and bolts of the nuts and bolts that they find, yes, on the ground.
Yes, exactly. Government programs to do this, mm-hmm, and classifications, because Clifford Stone has it all. Clifford Stone kind of reminds me of Tom DeLonge when he was on the Joe Rogan Experience, and he was talking about how he read books for 25 years and he figured out what the truth was. Except Clifford Stone's the next step farther. Clifford Stone is the guy that did the crash retrieval.
He's the guy that the books are written about. You just don't, yes, know him, because that is super secret, top secret, with 11 code words at the end. That is one of the things he said in one of the things he was talking,
yes,
about. Like,
yes,
you write an NDA that you can't even talk about the NDA, and then there's 11 code words at the end of it. One of those code words was Tabasco.
Yes, Tabasco.
When the guy would come, he goes, the general says you like the Tabasco. He's like, ah, shit, E.T.
He's like, I've been activated.
That reminds me of when I used to work in the restaurant industry. We had code words for just about everything, from angry customers to attractive customers.
Yeah.
Attractive customers, by the way, were shredded cheddar. I have no idea why. There's no there's no euphemism hidden in there. Yeah. I bet that's what it was. Tabasco. That's just, that goes right along with that. Maybe Clifford worked in a restaurant at some point.
Maybe so.
Maybe.
John, some of our friends back in the day worked at Montgomery Ward's, and I'll never forget that when a attractive person came in, they would say over the speaker, can I get a price check on a 13-inch Admiral? Which they didn't make a 13-inch Admiral television. Sadly, though, we were alive at the time when they were selling 13-inch televisions, so, you know. But
sadly,
like,
we were alive at the time when Montgomery Ward's existed.
Yeah man.
I remember having to stop at Montgomery Ward's on my way to college because we had a U-Haul, and my buddy and I, we were picking up his mattress, Mr. Brandon Rakowski. A little shout out there. So, yeah. You heard a little bit about Clifford Stone before the show, and I'm going to give you a little bit of his backstory before we dive too far into it. Who was this Clifford Stone that's involved for all this crash retrieval? Well, he was a former Army sergeant, and we have lots of those out there, but the thing that sent him apart is he had a unique skill set.
Mm-hmm. Like Liam Neeson, huh?
Exactly. Yes. He was special, and some have even reported him as a savant with telepathy. So that's not something that's on everyone's resume. I don't know if you know that or not. That's a resume builder.
You forgot the idiot part.
That's true. Right. This led him to be what they call an interfacer. Not like a previous episode when the guy was so boring that the tall whites would talk to him because they didn't find him startling.
Did the interfacers take the side of the Decepticons or the Autobots in the war for Cybertron?
Oh man, that's tough.
The interfacers were at war with the headmasters, if I remember.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He was tasked, he said, with visiting crash sites, and he was privy to pretty much the whole gamut, seeing aliens both dead and alive. He had firefights with aliens and found out that they had no effect on him. And he says that the world, not just the U.S., has categorized or cataloged at least 57 species, many of them humanoid. And here's a quote. He says, you have individuals that look very much like you and myself that could walk among us and you wouldn't even notice the difference. That's a hell of a statement.
Brent, the part you forgot to mention was that the species that are not humanoid are all the various species of octopi that are out there.
Right, right, which is just a given. That's
right.
You know,
I mean, we knew
you,
that.
You dive in a lake, you see some underwater octopus. It's just aliens. Everyone knows that. The Russians knew that. Everyone knows that.
Yep, that's true.
I said this earlier, Robbie. You reached out and you asked me if we had covered them, and you said, let's do it. What brought you to be fascinated with them, or what made you go down this deep dive? Because I read a couple of the things that you read, and they are they're not the most fun reads, some of these books that we do. What brought you down the Clifford Stone road, so to speak?
Clifford Stone was a name that I first stumbled upon when I was watching the History Channel classic, Hangar One. It's it's so classic.
Yes.
And Clifford Stone was featured on there a few times. He talked about some of his crash retrievals that he was involved in, and he actually shot down the Psalm 101 manual, which was great. I love that. But I felt like I needed to know more about this man, because this is a man that gets emotional easy on screen.
Thank you. He's like watching Garth Brooks. I was watching a comedian talk about him. He'll be like, and then I was, and he just starts crying all the time.
These crash retrievals are emotional things. You're talking about dead aliens. You're talking about aliens that are afraid, and just it's so all over the place. But Clifford Stone is just, I like Clifford Stone for whatever reason. I don't totally like everything about his story, but it's just like the manner in which he presents it. And
he comes off as that really nice
grandpa
or uncle. And I'll say this. I watched one of the interviews I watched with him was with Grant Cameron, and they're sitting there talking, and he was talking about one of the, he went to investigate a downed B-52 and it was in Cambodia. And that was when he got into I don't want to say a firefight, because he was shooting at the aliens that were just standing there walking towards him and had no effect on them. And these were the ones that he referred to as the, you know, your typical grays. They, because of the telepathy that he's, you know, able to be privy to, said, Clifford, you're not supposed to be here. And he like got emotional talking about that. He goes, it wasn't because I wasn't supposed to be in that area. It's because I wasn't supposed to be in the army. You know, he always says stuff like that. And he gets choked up and he starts to cry. And I don't know. I was literally talking to my wife before this, and I go, I think if he's doing that on purpose, it's really smart, because it leads a little bit of it. It gives you that. Obviously, he's telling the truth.
Right.
You know, kind of in the back of your mind. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening.
Right.
John, do you see stuff like that as deceptive or real, or how does that fall in your mind?
I don't know. The guy obviously has a way of attacked about him that makes you, when he's talking, you're rooting for him to be
gee whiz type guy, you know, that kind of guy.
You want to believe him, but the problem is that has nothing to do with the veracity of his statements, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's funny, whenever we enter into these, you know, I don't know, we probably fall a little closer to the skeptical spectrum than the non-skeptical spectrum. And you know, we talk about so many of these stories, and we talk about whether they, well, you know, could it have happened? Did it, you know, is it real? And we do that on much more mundane things. And then we get these stories that come along that are so fan. I had firefights with aliens and they were unaffected by my gunfire. And we're like, well, so that happened. And then here's the thing about that story. We skip over the part like, did this thing actually happen or not? Because it's so fanciful, you have to start with you have to come at it from just to get through the story. You have to, it's like a yes and. You have to go, okay, so that happened.
Right.
Now tell me more.
Right.
Okay, so that happened. Now tell me more. Because I'm still stuck at step one with, wait, you saw an alien? Or wait, you're saying that this part of the government even exists?
Right.
You know, we
got skip all of that. I'm still stuck.
So that's the phrase, suspension of disbelief. You have to kind of enter into it with a suspension of disbelief just to get through the story.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing. And we're going to have, there's going to be a lot more of that. Let's actually run the break real quick so we can start off fresh, because I want to talk about the book and his whole life, in the army and alien fender benders, which is really why he's here. That's one of the most important things. That's coming up after the break on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so it's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know? If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
You know, alien fender benders actually aren't near as bad for your insurance. Your rates don't go up as high as fender benders with other regular cars. I'm willing to guess.
Now, I'm not an insurance adjuster, but I'm willing to guess they're going to try to throw that under some act of God, which I think you could argue in a court of law.
Yeah, I agree. So it turns out when I had mine, my rates didn't go up at all. I still had to pay the deductible, but, you know, whatever.
When you had your run-in with aliens?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The alien fender bender I had.
Oh, whoops, my bad.
Sorry, Glaxon.
I want to start by commenting on where a lot of at least my info comes from on this. There's a book called Eyes Only, The Story of Clifford Stone and UFO Crash Retrievals. Okay, so bear with me. It's, in a word, to me, bad. And I feel bad because there's a great story, and I think Clifford deserves better. I just don't think that this book does him justice. I'm seeing that you're agreeing, and I'm glad you do, because that's just my take. There's a lot of potential, but the editing is like non-existent, and there are some really bad issues with like sentence structure and spelling mistakes. And I know that can happen, but it really pulled me out when reading it.
Yeah, it's.
Didn't you feel that way? Did you find that?
Yeah, because the book is a series of interviews that are conducted by Paula Harris, who is a controversial figure in the UFO world as it is. She has lended credence to the Stan Romanek stuff. She has recently published a book with Jacques Vallée about the Trinity crash, which is still, you know, like, it's been debunked, and it's been now it's like, oh, it's real. It's kind of like the Aztec crash, because it's, you know, it was initially debunked because it kind of buried, it almost buried the career of Frank Scully, the Aztec New Mexico crash. And then,
well, right, and she's coming off in this one, she said these are transcripts written word for word, and that's the only thing that I'm putting in this book is the actual things you said. Well, you could at least fix the fucking spell.
A little editing would be great. It doesn't take that much. Just take the little time. No. Hire somebody.
It's worse than Dreamland from quote unquote Bob Lazar, or whoever, you know, the ghostwriter for that one. And that's saying something. It's bad in that way.
It's very bad. But it's basically Paula Harris sitting down for like, I want to say like 85% of the book. She conducted like three interviews over the course of a few years. And then there are some radio interviews that Clifford did where he gives kind of a little more detail about the stuff that he did. And you kind of get the same stuff over and over again, really.
And the interviews that Harris did with him, they were not that long ago. They're not like, this isn't going back way back into the archives. No. You know, they were in the last few years prior to his death. So, yeah, you know, it is what it is. Before we get into it, because the big thing of this book and why we're talking about him is UFO crashes. Why they always be crashing?
Right.
Stone said that he knew of 12 of them. One of his quotes was, it's not like it's that often. But for the 20 years that he was in the military, 22 years, fucking 12 crashes that you retrieve shit? That seems like a lot, doesn't it?
And the thing about the crash retrievals thing, the crash retrieval started to become a thing in the late 70s, and it started with a guy named Leonard Stringfield. Leonard Stringfield published this book.
Which is a name that you've heard on here many times, just like every name we're going to find.
Yeah, he published a book in 77 called Situation Red, which was largely about the year of the humanoid sightings in 1973 and just how strange those sightings were compared to other years and other flaps where it was mostly just, you know, craft seen and, you know, close encounters of the first kind, close encounters of the second kind.
We talked about him in like the Pascagoula episode and a couple others.
Yeah. For sure. And he in that book, he published three different accounts of crash retrievals. And this became like his career for almost the last 20 years of his life. And he started to amass this, pile of testimony from different people that came forward and said, yeah, I saw a crashed UFO here. I handled it here. And pretty much every single mainstream crash retrieval story went through Leonard Stringfield first before it became popular. So we're talking about Roswell. He was one of the first people to talk to Jesse Marcel. We're talking about Kecksburg in the 80s. He was actually talking to Jim Romanski, the firefighter who allegedly got so close that he saw weird hieroglyphics on it. The Koyami crash. There's a lot of them.
Well, actually, I mean, we all know that was actually German writing.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I just want to be clear.
Yeah.
Everything German just comes off wrong and scary. It's fine. That's how it works.
Yeah. But he just documents this for over 20 years, for about 20 years. And he put out these things called crash retrieval status reports. Mm-hmm. He'd come out with them every so often. If you honestly want to listen to them, I don't recommend it because I listen to every single freaking one of these things. And like, it's just the basic, you know, testimony of this person, this person, this person, this person. And the thing about Leonard Stringfield is that he would take testimony from anybody. It didn't matter, firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand, he'd take it from everybody.
It's interesting how people call themselves archivists a lot, and they'll take all that information because they don't do any vetting because they just want to get it. But then that unfortunately becomes just accepted.
Yeah.
So Rob, those of us that are uninitiated, what's the tie between Stringfield and Stone?
So the crash retrieval kind of took on a life of its own after Leonard Stringfield and Stanton Friedman and Bill Moore, Kevin Randall, all these people started to look into different crash retrievals. Most of them looked into the Roswell incident, but Clifford Stone ends up getting involved in this in the 90s. And one of the first inklings of Clifford Stone is in Leonard Stringfield's status report update 7. So in it, he talks about, you know, having a conversation with Clifford Stone, and it contains none of the stuff that is in Eyes Only. I think he had just gotten out of the army by that time. It was published in 1994. So he got
90, I think. Yeah. So it was like 4 years.
Yeah. And the only piece of information that we get from this status report is that Clifford Stone claims that when he was 14 or 15 years old, he had a friend who was working at a base in Pennsylvania, because Clifford Stone grew up around in Pennsylvania, and they allegedly handled the Kecksburg object. And his friend basically took him to the military base and showed him the object. He's like, "Oh, it's acorn shaped, all this stuff." And by the time that Clifford Stone came out with this, like, this was, you know, known. It had appeared on Unsolved Mysteries by that time. They pretty much knew, you know, what the shape of this object was. But Clifford,
it was like the Wienermobile. It's in town. Everybody can come.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
John, you got to stop calling your car the Wienermobile.
Yeah, I'm sure you get like hot dogs thrown at you all the time. Yeah.
No, he's wrong. It's the Shaggin' Wagon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Color me surprised. Hey,
so wait, the other thing I'm not clear on, Brent, you said that he saw or that he was a part of 12 retrievals.
So that's when he was in the military, that he was part of retrievals of other things, but yeah, the number he says is he was a part of 12 retrievals of down.
During what time period? Like how long?
So he was in the military. He got out in 1990 and he was in the military for 22 years.
Yeah.
So he went out in the late 60s and he got out in 90.
Yep.
He had originally tried to get into the Air Force, and he couldn't get in for a medical reasoning.
I mean, 12 crashed vehicles. Are we like the Bermuda Triangle of the Milky
Yes.
Way? I mean, what is happening?
Yeah,
here? We're special. We're very special.
If I recall correctly, when Leonard Stringfield broke down all of this stuff that people were coming forward and saying, like, he was saying that there were 7 crashes in 1952 and 8 crashes in 1953. And this stuff, I was like, why are UFOs crashing all the freaking time? It just...
Yeah, I've heard all these crazy things that, like, when we started turning on radar, or when we turned on this, or when Betty got her new microwave, it was fucking with whatever their low-speed propulsion system... Everyone's got a reasoning.
Yeah.
And they were just coming down left and right.
Yeah.
It's almost like the lion somehow learned how to, you know, make the lion tamer sick, you know what I mean, somehow, like, and everyone's getting sick and they don't understand why
they've mastered intergalactic travel, but dealing with radar waves, woo, buddy.
They had never thought about that. The thing about Stone, I think he was kind of brought, that's so he came in the 90s, like Rob said, he was kind of brought to the attention of a lot of the, and I'm going to use air quotes here, new UFO enthusiasts after the wasn't it the 2001 when they did the National Press Club meeting?
Yes, yeah.
And exactly. That was the infamous one that we've talked about on here by Dr. Greer. Stone spoke of his secret clearance and a clearance that allowed him to be a part of said crash recovery and crashes that had bodies both dead and alive of alien entities. That was the big moment, and he was like, I am ready to tell Congress.
Yeah,
you can subpoena me. And that was when he kind of was blasted onto the scene. Rob, how important in ufology is that National Press Club meeting?
I think it put a lot of, you know, faces out there. Definitely it signal boosted things like the Rendlesham incident, because Charles Halt was, you know, all over that. And honestly, I think that press conference is responsible for Leslie Kane's book, you know, UFOs, and, you know, all those people go on the record. Like, if it wasn't for that event, we wouldn't have like the current discussion around disclosure that we do now. And I mean, there was another one, you know, like a decade later that was, you know, just as popular, but like, this is definitely something that has set the course for the conversation within UFO circles now.
I agree. And I think that when it happened, I think we were at a time, it was a simpler time then. I hate to say that, but I think a lot of people were ready to hear things like that. And then what happened was you then get down to the nuts and bolts of really bringing in these people, especially Greer. I'm going to say Greer because he was kind of his baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see how far out there some of these people and stories are,
yeah.
I guess.
Right. On the surface, like I remember when I first learned about that thing and, you know, you read about it and you're like, oh, retired general this and retired this, but you're like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. And then you read a little bit more about what they've said in their background and you're like, oh, that's a little, when you give me more context, it makes me like this less.
We just had Martin Keller on, you know, talking about the National Press Club and Greer. He was Greer's PR guy, and you know, I asked him, I said, you know, what the fuck is with Greer? And he's like, ah, man, you know, he used to be great, and he's a great guy. He's also a fucking loon, and that is not a quote. That is just
he said he's his own worst enemy, right, or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
He said, he goes, everyone's got warts. Some people's warts are just wartier than others. He's got a lot of warts.
His were the wartiest.
Yeah, the wartiest
of fucking warts. Wow.
I was just like, that's all. I really like that quote. I need to somehow work it into more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Into your macrame?
You started talking about his background. He started as a kid. You know, what was
Wait, you mean childhood? He started as a kid like most kids do? I mean, you know.
he started as a full-grown adult in a three-piece suit.
Yeah, exactly.
His full soiree into the UFO started as a kid, as opposed to just going in the military, and then they're like, now you're going to work on these things.
Yes.
So you're talking about Kecksburg. What was his childhood like? Was it crazy or before like the army time?
Oh, he was an experiencer from the start. And there are stories in that book about how there was one Christmas Eve in which his parents had gone out for the night or something like that. And he talked about how he had this quote unquote stepsister who came into his room, you know, not to miss.
Oh man, I just downloaded one of these stories.
And the stepsister, instead of wishing him a Merry Christmas, wanted to say, hey, you want to come see Santa Claus? So she takes him outside and she sees this guy. They see this guy who's kind of parading around, but like, he's not dressed as Santa. He's dressed in what he calls a business suit. And he says that he is made of dirt. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to process that fully, but you know, Clifford watched it for a while and then he got this message, or he got this thought in his head, like, I need to go to bed now. So he goes to bed.
And that's the thing. That's one of the frequent things that we're going to run into is these thoughts come into his head, like they're telling him things or he can pick up those things.
Yes, exactly. And, it was just weird after that.
He goes to school, man, Santa Claus fucking sucks.
Yeah.
But that red suit's full of shit, man.
Yeah. He was talking to his cousins and a friend about this. I think it was at school or, you know, just hanging out outside one day. And all of a sudden he says he hears like what sounds like a locomotive or something like that. And they look up and there's three UFOs in the sky. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Those ones shows them make sound, but other times they don't make any sounds.
So yeah.
That's a fun one.
Yeah, exactly. And then.
Well, they're like what you don't know is that they're like mockingbirds, oh, yeah. Right? So
yeah.
they hear another sound,
yeah.
And
sorry.
They heard a train, and they're like, ooh, well, let's emulate that. That's how UFOs.
Well, we also know that Bigfoot is that way from that documentary we all watched, Harry and the Hendersons, where he could emulate the sound
of the
alarm or the fire, the police, and everything.
It all comes together.
Yes. Which, yeah, I think we're really unlocking something here, kids.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
He joins the Army in 69. He talked about this a little bit too. He wanted to be in the Air Force, and he had medical issues that wouldn't let him in. And he went in and in and in. He wanted to go into like the. Finally, he meets someone, and they like kick the doctor out, and they're like, "Do you want to get in the Army?" He's like, "I want to be in the Air Force." They're like, "We'll let you in the Army." It's like, well, I want to be a warrant officer because the warrant officers can fly. And they're like, you can't fucking fly. You want to be in the Army. And he's like, okay. And that's something that he says that really came to bite him in the ass. Because when he goes in, then they immediately are going to sign him up pretty quick to do this crash retrieval stuff. And they're like, you have two choices. You can join us and do this, or you can go on about your business and not. But you signed up into the Air Force, and then you ended up going in the Army. So that's kind of like going AWOL, and we're going to put you in military prison.
Yeah.
He's like, what? That's what he says.
Yeah.
So he had to join them. I'm kind of paraphrasing that, if I'm remembering it right. Isn't that what he said?
Yeah,
along those lines?
Pretty much. And like the funny thing is, it's like they throw him in like head first, like, right out the gate. So he talks about this incident in Indian Town Gap, I think it's the place in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And he talks about how he has this Geiger counter, and they're doing a training exercise, only it's not a training exercise.
Real quick, so everyone can understand, so his background is in nuclear like retrieval.
Yes.
So if there is an incident that could have nuclear materials, he goes in, they test, they can be the crew that cleans it up. He's a cleanup crew.
Yeah.
That's important. That's why they use him for these things. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No. You know, he's approaching this strange object that he's assuming, I think, is like a bomb in the ground or something like that. He's got his Geiger counter. He gets closer and he realizes, nope, that's a UFO. And look at that. There's an alien body hanging out the side of the dang thing.
They fall out of these things a lot.
They do fall out a lot. They're like, they're hanging half in, half out of this thing all the damn time. It's a problem. It would get that door fixed.
Yeah, they've got that whole get there down. The whole stopping without falling out is another issue.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that seatbelts are important no matter how you're traveling,
right.
Whether it be domestically, internationally, or intergalactically.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why in the other documentary, Independence Day, they had to put those racing seats with harnesses in them.
They put the racing seats inside of the UFO.
Standing around, yeah. Doing nothing in there. That's why they're all dying.
Yeah, exactly. Also important for intergalactic travel, AAA. Always have it.
That's a good point. I mean, what if you run out of gas? Yeah,
exactly. There's got to be somebody, you know, that can help you out.
Do you guys have 93 or Element 115?
I need the un Pentium.
Yes, that's right. Goes about all these things. That was the whole the reasoning. When I say gimmick, of why they brought him in, they could do that because he had this skill other than the whole telepathy thing. I told you when they shook him down, he said he didn't know if he wanted to go back into the military because they were going to make him re-sign up, and he didn't know if he wanted a career. So they did the whole shakedown thing, and he ends up signing up and for a longer. And his role was how he described it, as an incident happens and he would get a call or a visit, and it's you go no matter the situation, no matter what you're doing, you go. Like, yep. You could be at your daughter's.
Did they actually call him? I mean, if he was telepathic, he could have just picked up the vibes.
Well,
or whatever.
That's more easily done when the aliens are doing it, not the people that are going to go pick up the dead aliens.
Got it.
Give him the code word. You know, and they're like, hey, Johnny General says Tabasco. And he's like, all right. And he says that he had a BA-50 bag, which is actually it's a bug out bag. He's got all his shit that he needs. That's a Air Force term, but they said in the Army they used them too. And ready at all times, a vehicle would come get him and take him to a staging area. And then he said they always had two teams anytime they were going out, A and B. And there was never more than 30 people tops in the whole thing. And he said that the difference between A and B is they're the exact same team. It's just who's closer. They put an A team together and a B team together.
Back to the ready bag, the BA-50. I really want. So I already bought, you know, kind of my own bug out bag. But next, what I want to do, I can like justify that, right? I can say to my wife, "Hey, I mean, just what if the power grid goes down?
It's for our safety. Helpful. Damn it!"
Yeah, you know, it doesn't have to be the zombie apocalypse. But now, what I've heard about are these bags that pen testers always have with them, and it's all things like being able to, unlock a double door from like a gymnasium and see around a corner, like all the spy shit. And I'm trying to figure out how I can justify.
But do they sell like the whole kit?
No, I think you have to go buy the pieces individually, kind of like we did for our bug out bags.
That would have had by Thursday. Thank God.
Oh.
John knows but, when I we mean, see something like that, he's like, "That's going to be at your house tomorrow." I'm like, "It's going to be at my house tomorrow." Yeah, that's
no, I'll say that'll be at your house next week, and you'll say, "No, it'll probably be here tomorrow."
Thank you, Amazon, if it's on there.
Yeah. It's Prime!
So he says a vehicle come get him. They go, like I said, they go to this place, and then the whole A team, B team is A team had to be within like a 2-hour radius of wherever it was going to be, and then they'd fly him wherever. They flew commercial sometimes, sometimes not. The other thing he said is when they'd go to these things, like you get rid of everything, even your dog tag. So yep. No one, you're completely, you don't have any insignias, anything on. They fly you in and you get to work. What else am I forgetting in the whole how he was brought in and shit story?
That's pretty accurate. I think my favorite story of travel is when they were being dispatched to Vietnam and they ended up having to refuel, I think, in like Oakland or something like that. And
this is an Oakland, I bet my ass that one or whatever.
Yeah. And then their CO basically pulls a gun and says, "Get back in the plane. You didn't see anything."
Yeah, he says one of them says like, "I bet my ass," or "You can kiss my ass if this is Oakland," or something like that.
Yeah,
and he literally, John, said that they pulled a gun and it was like the next person that talks dies.
Yep.
It's like, okay, I gotta go to the bathroom. Is it a hand signal? What?
But like, what's the inference there that they had really landed in Guam or something?
Yes, they had ended up. I think in this one they ended up landing in Cambodia.
Cambodia was, on that one. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah,
that was the B-52 story. I think it was weird too, because he said everything was compartmentalized, even though you're going and everyone here is going to or will see aliens. He said the other thing too is sometimes there weren't people like, okay, so he goes and does this all the time. All right. They would bring in other personnel that had never done it. He goes, they never briefed them. They just debriefed them.
Yeah.
And so these people have fucking panic attacks and shit, and you can't talk to them beforehand and be like, "Hey, man, you're going to see some fucking shit." Instead, they just go around the corner expecting to pick up, you know, a bad guy, and all of a sudden there's a Gleep Glock draining his pus sack.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, well.
Surprise!"
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised that people really don't eat bullets at that time sometimes, just like from the shock,
yeah.
You know, if that's true. Why the secrecy like that? What do you guys think? Why is that?
I can't even wrap my head around it, to be honest with you, because
I don't believe it. This is a detail that he's providing. I don't think.
But I've also heard in other cases with military, not that shit, that's you don't talk and you don't do this. And I there's probably some reasoning for it.
I don't think that they don't brief a professional group of people that are going in to take care of a situation. I believe that they compartmentalize things. Right, yeah. And if it's like engineers working on, like, you know, Bob Lazar's story, you know, and maybe if you were just working on propulsion, you didn't know anything else about the UFO. Like compartmentalization makes sense to me. But I don't think if you are the A team, you are literally the folks that they send in when shit goes wrong and it crashes, that they're not going to brief
you
ahead of
time. I said
that wrong.
They were briefed. Extra personnel as needed. Bodies on the ground, grunts weren't briefed. Mm-hmm. The A team still knows what they're doing. The AB team, whoever, they're both the same, just how quickly they're going to get there. they were brief. They knew where they were going. Now, they might tell them you're going for a B-52 and it's really something else or whatever. But they knew that they were going in for something. He knew when he was brought in that it was extraterrestrial in origin or thought to be. It's just when they needed perimeter people or someone to go in and stuff, they might just pull them out of Wright-Patterson or wherever, some grunt or some MP, and they didn't are the ones. But even the AB team, though, he says when they were flying, when you're with the A-team guys, you're not allowed to talk to one another.
Right.
Which is weird to me.
One thing that I do find interesting about these stories of Clifford Stone's and then some of the other stories that we might have called out as less than or maybe a little bit little questionable along the way, that all have a similar feel to them. Many of them, the details that are provided by the person feel wrong. They just don't feel like there are certain details when you find out about something that they did 50 years ago and it just gets unclassified. It's like you find out the details and you're like, oh, well, I mean, I understand why they did it that way. That's fucking terrible, but I understand why they did it that way. Like, you know, it kind of like it tracks. It might not meet your moral or ethical boundaries, but it tracks. The stories, like, my bullshit meter goes off when they don't track at all. Mm. When it doesn't align with like how you could even efficiently do these things.
Yeah.
And that's one of the through lines I've noticed through all of these stories and these storytellers that seem to be perhaps less than authentic.
Yeah.
Bold statement there, Cotton.
Yeah, I know. I'm really going out on a limb there.
You know what? That's a good time. Let's go to break one more time. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Roswell. We're going to talk about Corona, mm-hmm. his alien visitor. And where's the proof? We're going to try to answer that. It's not going to get done, but we're going to try. That's after the break on Hysteria 51. Now, I told you guys before we went to break that we were going to talk Roswell. Well, guess what?
No, before we went to break, you told us that we were going to talk about Corona.
Well,
so
Roswell, Corona,
they're connected.
It's the official beer of Roswell. See what I did there? Yeah.
So are you saying aliens are the actual reason for COVID-19?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was okay. That's a given. I thought that we'd already figured that. You know what? Pay attention, John. Jesus Christ.
Get with the
I think
program.
They learned from the mistakes of War of the Worlds. You know, I think they picked it up. I think they found it an interesting read. And they're like, wow, we really messed up at the end there. Let's get this right this time. Let's give them the virus.
They're on COVID 94.
Yes.
We're
going to do this with the slow burn.
So when he comes back to America after gallivanting and all this shit, he's going to be, I say come back to America, but you know what I mean? When he's going to be reassigned, he gets assigned to none other than Roswell, Arizona.
He kind of just relocated to Roswell. Like that's
kind of, he thought that they were putting him there for a reason.
Yeah.
It was kind of his whole thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah. There's not a lot to it other than, he'll go in when he talks about it. You know, how Roswell was a cover-up.
Yeah.
And Major G.S.C. Marcel was used as a puppet, and he can tell in those pictures how, you know, he's not actually smiling or laughing. It's like him just choking back his anger.
Right.
You know, things like that. And he thought that he was put there maybe to, like, because they want him to try to get to the bottom of things. I don't know. He always talks about his time in Roswell, but he kind of glances over it in interviews. And I never really understood, like, why he thought that was such a big deal.
Right.
At the end of the day, this guy was a serious military personnel. He did a lot. He was in Vietnam. You know, you can't take away what he did. It's the intangibles, the things he claims that we can't really put too fine a point on it. Like Corona, his right. alien visitor.
Spelled with a K. Spelled yeah. with a K.
You're right. So tell us about, you know, having a best friend with a K for a Corona name.
Oh, yeah. It's the best thing. And Corona insisted that you spell it with a K. Basically, from childhood, Clifford Stone claimed to see these invisible friends that, you know, it's like every kid who has imaginary friends, only, you know, they're carry on conversations and stuff like that. But Corona was kind of always there. to basically reassure him and be there for Clifford Stone through all of this stuff. And there's this incident when he's a kid, he had just moved to this like cottage or something like that. He was playing with some friends out back, and out back of their house, they have this, like, there's this like huge rock up on like a cliff or something like that. And it's like 200 feet up, and they see these weird dancing people. They hear music, but they see these people in white coveralls, you know, just like dancing around on top of this rock, and they get freaked out. And Clifford Stone runs into his house and he hides behind the stove. And he says he's there for a couple minutes before he feels this bony hand on his head, just like, you know, going up and down his head. And, you know, he took that to mean that the aliens always know where he is and stuff like that.
Yeah, he can't get away. It's like Billy Meyer. He had his own alien that was like, okay, this is what's going on. You know, and then now we all know that Billy Meyer now has been proven to be 100% true.
Oh, yeah.
And
are you shilling for Michael douchebag? Horn now? Are you shilling for
Michael Horn? Thank you. Thank you, Michael Horn, who, when we were going to speak at Alien Con, who didn't even know us, but he was going to speak at like Walt's Deli on Aliens the same night somewhere because he wasn't invited. It was like, fuck these goddamn pieces of shit. And he was like cursing us and stuff. And that's one of my claims to fame. Yeah, I love it. Michael Horn, Billy, his handler.
Yes, the handler. The one that I think actually, I don't know if he wrote the Billy Meyer story, the book that came out, or if he just published it or whatever, but yeah, just like
he's ringing it for every fucking coin he can get out of it.
I mean, grifters got a grift, man. There's plenty of grifters, and I think that's what separates Clifford Stone from everybody else. Is Clifford's not necessarily trying to grift anybody. It's unclear why he believes the stuff that he believes or says the stuff that he says. You know, the thing is like,
did you guys know that Billy Meyer and Billy Mays are actually the same person?
Holy God.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of throwing it off because when you used to see Billy Mays on TV, he wasn't missing an arm, and you know, Billy Meyer never talked about OxyClean, but I just trust me, don't look it up. It's just true.
Billy Mays was a retired assassin.
Yeah.
Traveled space.
It was the beard. It was the beard, man. That was an assassin's beard.
My favorite thing I ever saw at a Comic-Con one time was when they were doing Darkest Night, when the Green Lantern universe, the Black Lanterns were like zombies.
Yeah.
Of like the most powerful people that had died, and Billy Mays, thank you. Billy Mays had just died, and someone was Black Lantern Billy and he had the OxyClean, and they printed it so it was black. I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
That's amazing.
I fucking loved it.
I always found it suspicious during some of those infomercials why Billy Mays had one arm completely covered in tinfoil and he was holding a fake laser gun. I mean, it was so easy
to open the top.
I'm glad I could connect the dots for you guys.
Man, conspiracy's blown wide open.
Fuck your robot hate.
I know, but it was just the arm that was robotic. That's the difference.
So, Rob, back to his best friend, Corona. So I want to make sure I understand this. If you can't tell, I didn't read the book. So Corona, it was the friend from back then that stayed with him throughout his life?
Corona always seemed to kind of pop up.
So he was like Drop Dead Fred, essentially.
Exactly.
Is that what Drop Dead Fred was based on?
You know what? I think we're busting it wide open here. I think we've got this. Mm-hmm. We got it nailed. Good work, Goforth. You definitely got it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
See, that's why they had Princess Leia in Drop Dead Fred. They wanted it was like a wink, wink. You guys need to know this is aliens.
See, they put the breadcrumbs as long as you're willing to follow them.
So, like, with Clifford Stone, there is this like secret world within the real world, especially when you get down into like the folks that were doing, you know, investigations into UFOs, Project Blue Book and stuff like that. You know, alongside Project Blue Book, there are these other folks that are investigating UFOs. And this goes back, according to Clifford Stone, to World War II and to something called the Interplanetary Phenomena Research Unit, which was a unit put together by MacArthur and James Doolittle, who was, I do believe Doolittle actually looked into the Foo Fighters stuff back in the day, but I don't know exactly how deeply he researched it. But eventually this leads into like a more legit secret, emphasize the secret, you know, UFO research. And eventually what happens is, according to Clifford Stone, there is a unit called the 4602nd Air Intelligence Service Squad that was originally in World War II. It their mission was field exploitation of downed enemy aircraft and personnel and the exploitation of enemy documents. So, like, you know, people...
Which feels right. Yes. Feels real.
Yes, that does feel real. And then he goes on to say that they did have a peacetime mission. They were reactivated in 1953. And what were they here to do? They were here to recover UFOs. Of course they were.
Yeah, he says when he went in, the whole reason he signed up was, or no, I'm sorry, not signed up, but the reason he finally said, I'll do this, is they're like, we are going to give disclosure.
Yeah.
Do you want to be a part of this? He goes, well, then I find out the disclosure was the Condon Report. So not exactly what he thought it was going to be, but that's how they like spoofed him into it. It was, we're going to give this to you. And it didn't work out that way.
No, it did not work out
that way. But... he was a sneaky fuck. I'm going to tell you this because he claims that in 73, when he was involved in retrieval of a crashed extraterrestrial craft, he took a little piece of it and he put it in his boot and he buried it near his home in New Mexico after leaving the Air Force. So he's got that whole Bob Lazar, I got a little piece somewhere that I'm not going to actually show anybody.
Right.
And you can't prove it.
I mean,
because reasons and Corona.
I mean,
it's Corona. Just say that,
guys.
Corona,
it's fine. Story's got a story, man. Story's got a story. That's just the way it is. With
the other thing that he always stressed too, he goes, "We can learn so much from them, but they can learn so much from us." And that's why there's so many abductions. Why, then, gentlemen, would an intergalactic species do things in this manner? We go and look at other species all the time, and sometimes it could be dangerous. Yes. But we also take precautions, and then they're crashing left and right. What is so important here that they would be willing to do that? And what, then also, why aren't they just coming in and saying, hey, we exist. Why the secrecy?
I can't really answer that. I can't come up with a good concrete answer because like the linear path that UFOs take from 1947 till you get to like the first abduction accounts is very weird and strange. And like the UFO phenomenon starts out really tame in 47 with all of its stuff going on, excluding Roswell, because like Roswell was, you know, shoved under the rug for about 30 years. So to me, it doesn't even exist in 47, except for the few people in Roswell that, you know, had the paper and a few other, you know, newscasts that got out. I remember, I think it was Bill Moore talked about how he was reading the autobiography of an actor, and they were talking about how they were just driving cross country and they heard the story, essentially of Roswell on the East Coast on the radio somewhere. But like, evolving into the contactee stuff and then into the abduction stuff, it's just there's this strange linear path that seems like it's almost kind of like planned out in a way, which kind of either lends itself to the fact that there are aliens that are controlling everything or there are intelligence groups that are, you know, kind of shaping this to be
whatever they want. You don't think that they would lie to us for their own.
How many times have you brought up Richard Doty on this damn podcast?
Richard Doty's a saint. I'll tell you that right now. I actually had said something to another show recently that had, I mean, it was about a year ago. They were having him on, and I'm like, why?
Right.
They're like, he's amazing. And I'm like, are you dumb?
Right.
Yeah, I guess so. If that's really what you're. Now, if it would have been tongue in cheek, but it wasn't.
Right.
And it's not. Now he's just doing the rounds again.
Yeah. There have been researchers that I've talked to that were talking to Rick Doty, and they kind of gave him a free pass because, oh, well, Paul Benowitz, you know, he made those decisions. Like, Paul Benowitz wasn't, you know, well mentally. So
no, and he did his civic duty. As he called the fucking military right. and said, "I think something's wrong."
Right. I think. Well, I think like aliens or some crap civic are doing duty, their I can't thing.
Believe I just said that.
Yeah. Like, and what do? You string the guy along. You give him fake radio equipment that he says, you know, detects alien signals and stuff like that. And it's just like it's all very. This linear path is very strange until you get to the 80s and it's like, hey, it's Disinfo City, but like abductions are huge. Clifford doesn't really go into the whole abduction stuff. He doesn't.
So let's hit that, Rob. When you obviously through the things that you've said today, it strikes me that, you know, You said you wanted to unload. You wanted to get this off out of your mm-hmm. gray matter, but it also strikes me that you don't necessarily believe what Mr. Stone has to say. So my question is, what was compelling enough for you to go down the rabbit hole? Why are we here?
I am the kind of person that will always try to give people a welcoming space to tell their stories because I've got. So many fucking weird ass stories that I'm doing an episode about for Our Strange Skies coming up probably later in September. I don't know how to, you know, categorize these things or if they actually really happen. So mm-hmm. I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt, like right up front, at least in the terms of allowing them a space to tell their story. And actually listening to their story. So I think for Clifford, it was the fact that he came forward with this through a lens of someone who just seemed like he was trying to be empathetic in a way, and someone who wasn't openly trying to grift people out of money.
Yeah, he was kind of just telling the story and getting emotional while doing it. And I think that was a powerful thing for a lot of people.
I think it absolutely was. And it's just, it's the same stories over again. Sometimes they're embellished a little bit more. But like, you kind of connect with him a little bit more than, you know, say your Corey Goods and your, you know,
that's hero Corey.
Oh, when you say yeah. Name. Sorry. The hero himself. I like Randy Kramer better anyway. Yeah. He's definitely up there. As
I like anyone who's just been in the thick of things and came back to tell me about
I
it.
Like anybody who could say that they fought in an army on Mars and came back and didn't age a day, fought in this army for 20 years.
Hey, when, who was it that gave him his, Donald Rumsfeld?
Yes.
When they de-aged him or whatever it was. And he's like, thank you for your service, son. That just rings true to me for some reason.
It does. It sounds like something Rumsfeld would say. But
John and those at home that don't know what we're talking about, he says that he was on a war on Mars. He was on Mars like 20 years doing a war.
Yes.
They send people there. Then they come back and they de-age you. I think it was de-aging, right? Or he doesn't
age. He said that he didn't age. Like it was almost like no time had passed. He had gone back into his childhood
they use
bedroom.
It, and then when he comes back, he's got 20 years of memory and life experience, and he's still the same age.
Right.
So he comes forward and he's like, I've been on Mars.
Right.
And Donald Rumsfeld gave me a medal.
Oh, yeah.
You know how if you like get in a plane and go across the international dateline, you can actually get younger in the same day.
Yeah,
it's like that. Only going to Mars. There's just, you know, just trust.
It's an intricate system of tubes and wires. You wouldn't understand.
It's exactly right. That's exactly right. And various intergalactic lines of demarcation. There's a lot of ins and outs. But, you know, we'll just leave it there.
Here's the problem. Clifford feels so sweet. He feels so nice. Yeah.
Okay, so that brings me to my question, Rob. You gave him the benefit of the doubt and you went down the rabbit hole, and the only thing you wanted to do now is expunge said experience from your brain. Did you come out the other end going, well, I gave him the benefit of the doubt, but I'm out? Or where did you land?
I kind of landed in the spot where I'm indulging an old man, his stories. They can exist in this sphere, but I'm glad it's out of my brain space now, so I can focus on other things and I don't have to, you know, be emotionally connected to a man who said that he helped an alien escape in Virginia by cutting a hole in a fence and allowing him to be picked up by a UFO. Like, the suspension of disbelief is huge. Right up.
It's like game. It's like his whole work, like that's like was part of Paul.
Yeah.
You know, they pulled out of the Clifford Stone story and all this stuff when they were putting that together. Mm-hmm. You know, they took so much out of the UFO playbooks of things like that. I think that the reason that people latched onto him is, like you said, he wasn't trying to sell you something per se, especially off the bat. I know there's the book, but that was more because people wanted to put it together for him, right. You know, and he was just out there going, oh, gee, golly gosh, this happened and here it is. And he'd start crying and you'd feel for him. And maybe he needed the attention, but he had a family. This guy wasn't sitting at home lonely.
No.
You know, like some people. And he wasn't, you know, Bill Cooper going fucking ape shit out there and trying to start a revolution.
Right.
He falls into a weird side of it.
There is one, I think, incident that really, and I mean, Clifford started talking to people before this. You know, he was talking about how he's putting together these government documents that he got. He claimed that he had like all this stuff, and part of it in that book too, when you read it, is like Paula Harris is completely giving into it. She's basically saying, oh, you're completely right, Clifford. I totally believe you in all this stuff. And she's also like saying, it's like, oh, well, yeah, I know that. Oh, well, yeah, I know that. But I think the death of his son heavily affected him. And this isn't something that we talked about earlier, but in 1995, his son, he had talked to him before his son was going to go out on his motorcycle. He said that there were problems with his brakes, but he wasn't, you know, he felt fine riding it. And he ended up getting into a car accident and getting killed. And he talks about how there's a cover up in it, how it was actually a woman, and how he believes this woman was connected to the military, trying to get him to shut up about some of this stuff. And like it kind of spirals.
Do you feel like that's like a breaking point where some people, and maybe even he believes what he was saying?
Yeah.
Suspension of disbelief here. Let's say that it isn't true.
Right.
it really isn't, but maybe that he truly believed that the things he was saying was
right.
Like coping mechanisms, they're hard.
Though there are so many different ways and mechanisms that people use to cope with anything.
So why do people like Grant Cameron and stuff like this that you see in all Greer, why do they latch onto him in stories like this and just give him this place? Is it because he can better them, you know, financially? Is it because they believe him actually?
Oh, content doesn't write itself, Brent.
I also think too that Clifford Stone in a way kind of lives in this obscure space, even after the disclosure, you know, press conference thing. There is a part of him that is still obscure, that while people do, you know, talk about him from time to time and stuff like that, he's still relatively obscure. Like, you know,
yeah,
even like Randy Kramer, to in a certain extent, is obscure next to someone like Corey Good, who is just out there in that mainstream. And there's always going to be people that, you know, offer them that space. And in terms of belief,
the Goods are out there milking it for everything they can get. And I think that's the difference, is I don't feel like he was doing that.
Right. Exactly. I don't think Clifford was doing that at all. I think he, just a guy telling his stories.
And when he died, they didn't go, and he was offed by the military. So that's good too.
Right.
You know,
they saved that for someone like John Mack, who like was absolutely, it's dumb. John Mack was not killed by any military. It was a drunk driver. All right. And even his family, after it had happened, had forgiven that drunk driver and didn't even want the charges pressed against them. So, like, you know, stop with the conspiracy crap. But
conspiracies are so sexy.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
Easy and,
kind of like the one with Carla Turner, where they said that her advanced cancer was, you know, given to her by the government. No, it wasn't.
Right.
I feel like the kid at the lunch table that again, finally got to sit there, and everyone's talking about like this other party they went to, and I have no fucking idea who was at that party. Like, you guys are just rattling off names, and I'm like, oh yeah, Carla, yep. Nation, if you feel the same, if you feel that way, you need to read more. Apparently,
You UFO really don't.
We sector. Did the reading for you so that you didn't have to.
Well, that probably puts the ball on the tee to ask the nation what they think. Nation, if you would like to tell us what you think about Clifford Stone, if you'd like to tell us what you think about Greer, because he came up a lot, or anything else as it relates to UFOs and crashed UFOs and disclosure, just hop on Facebook, you know, the government's listening device, and search Hysteria Nation. That's our Facebook discussion group where you can get your name added to a list.
No, actually, it's not a list. You'll be getting a visit from like some dudes in black suits, or maybe they got blue suits, but they're wearing sunglasses and they're going to say, shut the hell up.
Really nice lipstick. Yeah. Pale skin, nice lipstick. That's absolutely.
And let's be clear. Let's be clear. It doesn't have to be dudes.
No, that's true.
There are now
women in black. Thank you, Nick Redfern, for clearing that up.
Mm-hmm. I like to think they're just androgynous, so we weren't sure in the first place.
Yeah, that's also fair.
That's
wigs aren't cheap. Just like these stories don't write themselves, and wigs aren't cheap. Those are two things you can take to the grave.
That's right.
I'd also love to hear why you guys are hopping on there. Had you heard of Clifford Stone? If you hadn't heard of Clifford Stone, do you like these more? I'm not going to say obscure. This one definitely isn't obscure, but if you liked it, I would love to do more of these ones that maybe haven't been done to death like Roswell and some of the things we do, because I know people ask for those. But if there are other names in the Clifford Stone vein, let us know. You can also let us know on our regular Facebook page, facebook.com/hysteria51pod. You can go to Patreon, patreon.com/hysteria51. You can get up all nights, mad blurry hysterias. You can listen to John rap. You can listen to all sorts of crazy stuff. Voicemail, if you want to listen to yourself maybe on the show, 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. And we got a whole episode of voicemails coming up here soon. If you're getting any of this, hysteria51.com. But the thing to not forget is how to find Rob. Rob, you're all over the place. You got like 19 shows. You're bringing back Our Strange Skies. Tell everyone what you got going on, where they can find you, and all that jazz.
So, yeah, I've got like 3 podcasts that I'm actively involved in. Our Strange Skies. I'm working on stuff. It's taken me forever to do it, mostly because my job is very time consuming. And secondly, because of the other projects that I'm working on. So I have a Dungeons and Dragons podcast. It's called Rolling Through the Realms. I am the dungeon master for that one. That comes out every other Tuesday. We actually just dropped a new episode, so go check that out. And if you want to hear me play a George Norrie like character in another tabletop role-playing game, check out the Order of Podcasters. It's very much like if Supernatural, the folks that were involved in that had day jobs. That's basically what it is.
I want to hear you modulate your voice so you're doing an Art Bell like
that. Oh, man.
That's what I'm ready for.
Oh, man. Like, the voice that I use is pretty dang close. It's very dynamic. Yeah.
Now, does it take place in the High Plains Desert?
No, it's close. It takes place in Texas, so not far off.
We'll give it to you.
Yeah. But if you want to follow me anywhere, I am on Twitter at your UFO guy, spelled Y-E-R UFO guy. That's the best place to figure out where the hell I am, what I'm doing.
That's been Clifford Stone. Clifford the Big Red Stone. Mm-hmm. He's a trip. Go watch him. It's tough sometimes, just because he talks real slow. He never really, he rambles.
Yes.
And he cries a lot. So it's an interesting.
If this episode was rambly for you, we did it in the light, in the way that Clifford Stone would do it, which is just to ramble off a bunch of stuff.
Hey, so what happened there? Blah, blah, blah. You didn't answer my question, though. Hey, blah, 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 blah. All right. So we kind of got it out. I'm just going to skip and go to the next one. That's kind of how they deal with interviews with him.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So that's been our thoughts on Crash Retrieval, Clifford Stone, and Corona, our own personal alien. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been Rob.
And I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation.